The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid, wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Will Brinson. I'm your host. This is our Week 10 Sunday recap, breaking down all the action from a pretty insane weekend. Joining me to do so, Ryan Wilson in shirt and tie from Stamford, Connecticut, and John Breach, who just randomly threw on a Brinson Sucks hat that makes his head look even smaller than it normally does.
I don't wear it enough. You know, I found it's really quite the fashion statement to wear this. And so I think I'm going to start wearing it more.
You should. I wonder how long it would take you to like, before somebody would be like, are you talking about Wilbur? Like how long do you think you would have to wear that hat before somebody said something to you?
A year.
Probably.
I don't ever go out in public. So that's the problem.
He would leave it at the murder scene and then that would be a whole thing.
Would that be the purpose of that is to frame me or like what, how does that work?
I don't know. He's a weird, like, I mean, the whole bit is that he's a serial killer. So who knows why he does what he does.
By the way, congratulations to Dustin Johnson for winning the 2020 Masters. If you're not listening already, you should check it out. The First Cut podcast did an incredible job breaking down all things Augusta. Go check that out. And, yeah, the boys deserve a break. Before golf gets right back in the swing. 144 days till the next Masters, which is insane. Patriots Ravens is where we'll start though. Patriots 23, Ravens 17. A shocking upset as Bill Belichick, a home underdog of 7.5 points. It actually closed at 6.5. So there's plenty of steam on the Patriots. Wins in it wasn't a pretty game, but they ran the ball. Cam Newton made some plays. Jacoby Myers threw a touchdown pass. Damian Harris had 121 rushing yards on 22 carries. And the Patriots moved to 4-5 and frankly put themselves right back in the playoff and AFC's discussion, in my humble opinion. Agree or disagree, Ryan?
I agree. There are four teams out of the final playoff spot if we're going to seven teams per conference. So obviously that changes. We go to eight teams, depending on what happens. But I will disagree with the fact that it was an ugly football game. I actually thought it was a pretty good football game, given how terrible the conditions were. It was probably one of the cleanest games the Patriots have played this year, which is sort of funny, given that it was torrential downpours and gusting winds at times. And here's the other thing. So, terrible weather.
Ugly is the wrong word for it. It was just sort of
high octane.
It wasn't high octane.
Yeah.
It was a meat grinder.
It was a high school football game where the quarterbacks on both teams aren't very good. And you have good running games. But I will say this.
Oh, also, I forgot to say, hey, Breach. How do you, we say hey? No, never
mind. Oh, we made fun of the hat. The hat.
Yeah, that's right.
But I will say this. Like, the Patriots understood the conditions as Breach throws the hat away. And they leaned on the running game. Didn't ask Cam to do too much. Cam actually scored another touchdown. By the way, Cam came to this game with 2 passing touchdowns, 7 interceptions, and 8 rushing touchdowns. Added a pass and a rushing touchdown in this game. On the other side, the Ravens had 34 pass attempts from Lamar, and I know they trail for a little bit, but you can still run the ball in this game, even though they were down at one point. They had 30 rush attempts, and they felt like they didn't know who to give the ball to when it came to rushing. J.K. Dobbins barely touched the ball. They had Gus Edwards. Mark Ingram was back. And in addition to the last drive, where it looked like the Ravens thought they had 15 minutes left to play, and they were just sort of lackadaisical on that final drive, the thing that drove me crazy was the fourth and short. I don't know if it's one or two. You have them playing wide receiver and Mark Ingram taking a snap. Matt Skura hasn't been able to snap the ball all day because of the weather or he's hurt or whatever. And you lose 8-9 yards. Like, why do you have Lamar Jackson if you're going to line up there like Joe Flacco during Lamar Jackson's rookie year? This is a huge loss for the Ravens because we'll talk about it, but the Browns won and the Steelers won. It's a huge win for the Patriots, as you alluded to, because we'll talk about this. The Bills lost and the Dolphins also won. So, things are tightening up.
Yeah, they are.
I would say, I agree with everything you said, except for that very first thing, Ryan, about the Patriots being back in the playoff race. I just don't feel it. I'm not seeing it. And here's my problem is that if you look at the AFC standings, you have nine teams that have at least 6 wins. And here's the problem. That's never been done before. This is the first time you've ever had that through 10 weeks in one conference. So if you're the Patriots right now, you're the 10th seed. You have 4 wins. So you're 2 games behind. So you have to have so many things fall in your way, but also have at least 3 of these teams tank. I mean, and you just look at who's in front of them. And, you know, who's the most likely to tank here? The Browns, the Titans, the Ravens? There's just, you need a lot of things to happen. I just think it's too many to happen.
By the way, this is the same person who says every team's going to win out every game. So
yeah, that's Princeton. That's Princeton shtick.
No, it's not. I don't understand. You're like, I mean, I get your point that these teams are 6-3, but like, look at the teams that you're talking about. Baltimore, Cleveland, Pittsburgh all have to play each other again. Like, those teams are matching up against each other. I don't know if you know this, but both teams won't win those games when they play each other.
They can tie.
New England plays 2 of the other teams in front of them. The Dolphins.
Yeah, and then if they lose one of those, then
if they lose those games, of course they're out of the playoff.
Yeah, any team could lose any game and any team could win any game, Brenton. I get that, but I am telling you.
They beat the Raiders. They beat the Ravens. They have tiebreakers over some of these teams. I just think if you're 4-5, and the team you're chasing, that's the 7 seed, is 6-3. You are in the playoff hunt.
Yeah, but those head-to-head tiebreakers don't mean anything if you're in a 3-way tie where the first tiebreaker is conference record.
Well, that's – yeah, I mean, let's cross that bridge when we get to week 17, or like week 15. And we see – I mean, what are you talking – so your argument is the Patriots are not in the playoff hunt.
No, my – you said that the Patriots get back in this thing, and I am saying I do not feel like they are a viable playoff contender right now.
Okay. Somebody clip that. I know that there's a podcast listener who's going to clip that and send it to us in week 14 when the Patriots are like the 4 seed or something like that, or the 5 seed, I guess it would be.
Or they win the division because the Bills collapse.
And
the
I still think collapse. The Patriots Everybody are going to a viable play to win the division. And I don't think this is a good Patriots team, but I think in its own weird way, this Patriots team is, you know, people are like, oh, maybe this is showing that it was Tom Brady in New England. It's like, or this team is showing exactly just how good a coach Bill Belichick is because he's managing to like keep this thing together. I mean, this is a game. They were a 7.5-point dog to, they almost lost to the Jets on Monday night. And then they have to turn around and play the Ravens at home on Sunday night and they managed to beat them. I mean, this is that was a really good coaching effort. They brought up the kitchen sink in a lot of ways. They knew how to get after Lamar. They made some big defensive plays and Cam looked a lot more spry than he had the previous few weeks.
By the way, I'll just point out quickly, heading into this game, according to Football Outsiders, the Patriots had a 6.9% chance of making the playoffs. The Bills were at 93.5, Dolphins at 56.2. And so it sort of bolsters Breach's point when you look at the other teams in the conference in terms of.
Do they update the odds?
They haven't updated. This is coming into this game. So the odds will obviously be updated, but I don't know how much given that some of the teams in front of them also won too.
Sure. But, and like you said, Ryan, what you just said, Brenton, was that Belichick absolutely outclassed John Harbaugh here. I mean, this was just, he embarrassed the Ravens, whether or not, it's not like the Patriots changed their game plan 5 minutes before the game. They said, you know what? We're going to run the ball straight down Baltimore's throat, dare them to stop us. And they couldn't. Like, they just kept running and running and running. What, 39 run calls out of 57 yep. plays? So you're talking about
173 yards.
More than 2/3 of their play calls were runs. And I think that's what they realized the past few weeks. They're saying, you know what? If we let Cam throw the ball too many times. There's inevitably going to be a couple mistakes in there. What if we keep his pass attempts under 20 and we just run it? And you beat a good team in Baltimore, and that is impressive. But I think a bigger takeaway here is that, you know, you got to be concerned about the Ravens now.
Mm-hmm. So Baltimore, I thought, did a poor job with their offensive game plan. Like, yep. To me.
Hey, let me say quickly to follow up on Breach's point. Yeah. Coming into this game, the Ravens were number one in run defense, according to Football Outsiders. They were without Calais Campbell. Brandon Williams got hurt. Yep. And then the floodgates were opened up for the run game for the Patriots.
That would be my biggest concern if I'm the Ravens long term. So, like, they lost Nick Boyle to a gruesome injury. Ugh. You could hear his leg break on the telecast. It was awful. Are you smiling, Breach?
That's my grimace.
Okay.
Like, that was bad.
They, yeah, it was bad. They, and they said Brandon Williams, Calais Campbell's out. Ronnie Stanley's out for the year. Those are really big injuries for Baltimore. And I think they're sort of starting to show up. And that would be my concern if you have them to like win the division, hypothetically, or if you, you know, like you have a bet with Pete Briscoe about it and he won't stop texting you that you owe him $200 in theory. Ooh. Yeah. But more than that, I feel like the Ravens just keep trying to make this Lamar's going to be a passer this year thing happen. Right. And I understand you want to develop and grow as a pocket passer and you don't want to, and I don't think he's like, nobody's pigeonholing him as just a runner, but I don't understand. For me, they had one drive, which started on their 6 yard line. It was the second drive of the game, 13 plays, 94 yards, 6 first downs. They score a touchdown. It lasts 8 minutes and 4 seconds. And that was where they used their run game and they used their 2019 offense to really dominate. And at that point, you're like, all right, you know, maybe they gave up that first score, but they are about to take hold and do Ravens stuff. And then they just seem to abandon it again. And you're right. The defense wasn't very good. The Patriots scored on 2 straight possessions. That was huge. But I just feel like Baltimore's identity has changed a little bit from the team that just destroyed the regular season last year.
It's changed, and Willie Snead has been the leading receiver in several games. I know about Mark Andrews, but there's no one to, if you're going to be a passing team or trying to be more passer friendly with Lamar, who's he throwing the ball to? Marquise Brown was targeted 6 times. He had 2 catches for 14 yards. Miles Boykin wasn't even thrown to at all in this game.
That was Marquise Brown's squeaky wheel game. I mean, that's how bad that was.
So I don't know what the solution is other than, hey, do what you did in 2019, because that seemed to work pretty well.
Well, that's what they did on the drive that Brenton was talking about. They had that was a 13 play drive. They only threw 3 passes. They ran the ball 10 times. And it's like, hey, look, that's the Ravens from 2019. That's the Raven team we know who can just run down your throat. And then they switch it up, throw you a curveball by passing it so that it's completely unexpected. It catches you off guard. And then all of a sudden, like you guys just said, they're trying to force this Lamar, make him a passer thing, just trying to make it happen. Fetch isn't going to happen. Sorry, guys. Sorry for the Mean Girls reference, too.
Good Mean Girls reference. All right, let's.
I didn't get it, but okay.
Fetch is a thing that they want to make happen, and it's not going to happen.
Hey, quickly, who finishes better in that division? Not the Steelers, but the Browns or the Ravens?
The Steelers are winning the division, right?
I think so. We'll see if they can beat the Jaguars next week. But Browns, Ravens right now, what do we got?
Beat the Jaguars next week. I'll still take the Ravens.
Okay.
I am going also to take the Ravens because they still play the Cowboys, Jacksonville, the Giants, the Bengals. They've got a lot of very winnable games.
I mean, the hand-wringing about the Ravens is totally reasonable, and I think there are very viable concerns about Baltimore. They've also lost 3 games to the Chiefs, Patriots, and Steelers.
Yeah, but yeah. This Patriots team is not good.
It's Bill Belichick. I mean, like, they're not – I mean, they played really well. The Ravens didn't play well.
They did play well. The
Patriots played well. All right. Let's move along to the game of the day. Maybe the game of the year.
Yeah.
The most thrilling final few minutes that we've seen all season long as the Cardinals beat the Bills 32-30 on what can only be referred to from here on out as the Hail Mary, a bomb from Kyler Murray. A 43-yard touchdown technically, but he ran around a bunch and threw it from the 50-yard line, a Hail Mary into the end zone. DeAndre Hopkins surrounded by a trio of Bills defenders was able to reel in the touchdown catch. Let's see, who did he have on? It was like Tre'Davious White, Jordan Poyer, and Micah Hyde, all like sandwiched around him, and he still pulled in the touchdown catch, and the Cardinals win on a with 2 seconds left on a crazy touchdown, which followed not far after Stephon Diggs catching an incredible touchdown pass from Josh Allen with like 34 seconds left. It looked like the Bills were going to survive this, and then all of a sudden that the thing with Kyler happens. It was crazy. What an ending.
The entire game was absolutely bonkers. I mean, you're talking about the Bills were up 23-9, and it looked like they were just going to coast to this win because all the Cardinals were doing, they drive down, they kick a field goal, they couldn't get the ball in the end zone, and it didn't seem like there was any possible way they could come back, let alone win off of a Hail Mary with 2 seconds left. And then it was just like all of a sudden something clicked, and they were able to get in the end zone. You know, they scored 2 touchdowns. Over like the late third quarter, fourth quarter, and then finally that third touchdown on the Hail Mary. And I have to say, like, I was literally, cause our editor, RJ White, is a huge Buffalo Bills fan. God bless him. And I was thinking in my head after the Bills scored, like, I didn't think the Cardinals were going to win on Hail Mary, but I was thinking, if I was a Bills fan, how comfortable am I right now? The fact that my team is going to win this game. And even though the probability chart probably had this at like 98%, I'm sure a Bills fan had it in their heart at about 40% because of all the crazy things that happened to the Bills, and nothing was crazier than this because the Bills, as you said, Brinson, they played this perfectly. They had 3 defenders on DeAndre Hopkins. You can't do any better than that besides someone actually knocking down the ball, but you can't knock it down when the guy out jumps you and is 8 inches higher than everyone else. There's literally no way to stop that. So, this was amazing. And yes, easily the best game of the day, the week, the year, the month, all of that.
Here's how you stop it. And we've seen this before. Megatron used to go stand in the end zone. We've seen, Gronk used to stand in the end zone.
Who would you put out there?
Here's the thing. Like, Stephon Diggs isn't tall enough to do it.
Josh Allen.
You still
have to. Oh, great. 6'5",
235, incredibly athletic. Put his ass back there and let him just slam dunk whoever the ball.
Who in the Stanford office came up with this idea that you're stealing it from?
I came up with it. Because BMAC was talking about it, talking about how this can't happen and how when they practice this back in the day, there's someone that bodies up the receiver. There's someone that goes over the top. And there's someone that is the tip guy and knocks the ball on the ground. And clearly all three of those guys were there. They just couldn't make a play, probably because they were 3, 4, 5, 6 inches shorter than Dre Hopkins.
That's a great call. I love the Josh Allen idea. So Kyler Murray is now 6.5-1 to win the MVP at William Hill. We'll get to that in a second. Hold on. I want to point out that this is 11 games this season, which a team has overcome a deficit of at least 14 points to win, which is tied to the 2014 season, which had 11 as well, for the third most such games through week 10 in NFL history. The 2020 season joins 2015 as the only season in which a team has overcome a deficit of at least 13 points to win in each of the first 10 weeks of the season. It's the first time the Cardinals have won a game while trailing by 14 points or more since exactly 11 years ago. Versus Seattle on November 15th, 2019. Since then, they were 0-55-1 entering today when trailing by 14 points. Kyler Murray, the first quarterback in the Super Bowl era and fourth quarterback in NFL history to rush for a touchdown in 5 consecutive games, joining Johnny Lujack, 6 consecutive games in 1950, Tobin Rote, 5-56, and Pro Football Hall of Famer Dutch Clark, 5-36. The last quarterback with 10 rushing touchdowns in a season? Cam Newton in 2015.
No one asked, but right now, Kyler Murray is my number 2 in the MVP race behind Patrick Mahomes, ahead of Russ. Russ is, we can talk about it in a little bit. Russ has got a lot of work to do. He is the only person on that freaking team. And number 3 on my list, and Eric Casilius talked me into this one, Big Ben Roethlisberger.
Oh, that's interesting.
I didn't want to hear that.
Look at those numbers.
I'm going to take a break when Wilson starts talking about Roethlisberger's MVP. Go to the bathroom or something.
I think Kyler is Ben is 25-1. That's actually not terrible value. If the Steelers go undefeated, he'll probably win it.
He's got like 20 something touchdowns and 4 interceptions.
I think that Kyler's in the mix.
And well, let me ask you this. So if the game ends with that ball falling incomplete, Josh Allen's number 2 in my mind, I think.
Yeah, maybe so.
That touchdown he threw to Stephon Diggs to quote unquote win it at the time is a big boy throw.
That was an absolute dart and an incredible drive. You know, Kyler, the Cardinals drive was not magical or anything like that. I mean, it was, I guess, but you know, they threw to DeAndre Hopkins over the middle of the field and had to burn a timeout. Then he burned 10 seconds running around looking for something before hitting Larry Fitzgerald on the like right there on the sideline. Fitz steps out of bounds. Then I think they had to use one more timeout, I believe. And then he had to throw the 50-yard, you know, had to heave it from midfield and just an absolute hope and a, like, you know, hope and a heave situation. But the what he does running the football, the way he works in the red zone, and I think when he's on, his passing game is really, really good. It's just sometimes he's a little more hit or miss than what you'd like to see at an MVP, but he just has to be in the mix at this point.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I absolutely agree with Wilson that he's number two at worst. So you can have Patrick Mahomes at one. You can have Kyler Murray at one. I don't think anyone's going to argue with you, but it's just, he's so dynamic because he brings the mobility that Mahomes doesn't. You know, Mahomes can run around when he needs to, but he doesn't have Kyler Murray's speed. He doesn't get out there and run. Kyler Murray had two rushing touchdowns in this game. He didn't even throw a touchdown pass until that final offensive play for Arizona. I think my only issue with Josh Allen was that he made some just mind-numbingly bad mistakes, namely those two interceptions that were just, I'm pulling my hair out. I'm not a Bills fan. I'm pulling my hair out saying, how are you making these throws? You're practically throwing it right to the Cardinals defensive back. And it is every single week, no matter how, you know, we saw the Bills blow a huge lead against the Rams before they held on to win that game. And it was because Josh Allen made a couple mistakes and he keeps making these critical errors that let the other team kind of either stay in the game or creep back into the game. And, then you have Kyler Murray who's just, you know, throwing Hail Marys and completing them. And right now that's the difference, is that in the clutch, Kyler Murray's coming through and Josh Allen's, you know, he did throw the touchdown pass to Stephon Diggs, but again, two second half interceptions are pretty devastating.
Well, if Josh Allen is on the field and breaks up that pass, he's definitely the MVP. So that's on him.
Now, in Josh Allen's defense, he also caught a touchdown pass.
Yeah, that's right. Good point. Imagine right, that breaking up the game winning touchdown, catching a touchdown. You got to forget about those terrible interceptions and throwing.
Yeah, I think Buffalo is 7-3. They're going to be a playoff team. This is not a damning loss or anything like that. It's a huge win for Arizona because they would have fallen to 5-4. And, you know, you got to make up ground. The Seahawks lost. The Rams won. We'll talk about those games a little bit. But for Arizona, you know, they are right there in the mix in the division. I think Kyler is a legitimate MVP, is somebody worth having a discussion about. The other thing I would point out about this game really quickly is that, and this is sort of a no bleep Sherlock situation, but it points out why the Vikings and Texans were silly to trade these star receivers. Like, obviously the Texans was really bad. I mean, Hopkins had 12 targets, 7 catches, 127 yards and a touchdown. Cole Beasley was awesome in this game too, by the way. But Stephon Diggs, 10 targets, 93 receiving yards and a touchdown. Like that, I mean, you know, that production that you get. Justin Jefferson's great, but like, if you're Deshaun Watson, you're watching this game, you're like, what? Why? Why?
And you mentioned Cole Beasley real quick. On that touchdown drive with the Stephon Diggs score, the Bills had a 3rd-and-4 on their own 28-yard line, just under 3 minutes left. If they don't convert, they might have punted because they had 3 timeouts, and they might have just said, look, you know, we're going to send our defense out there because they've been doing okay. But Josh Allen drops back to pass, throws. It looks like
catch is crazy.
It looks like he's about to airmail it out of bounds. And Cole Beasley, who was like my height, somehow throws his arm up there, one hands it.
Looks like Odell Beckham's catch.
I mean, it was amazing. And then somehow gets both feet in bounds, gets exactly 4 yards, gets the first down, and the Bills keep trucking down and get that touchdown. So I thought that was probably, if DeAndre Hopkins doesn't catch a Hail Mary with 2 seconds left, that is probably the catch we're talking about and how that was the catch of the day, even though it was only 4 yards.
And I will say, before we move on, the one thing that Kyler Murray does really well that Lamar Jackson still hasn't managed to do, he doesn't take huge hits.
Yeah.
And that's an issue that we talked about with RG3, of course. And then Lamar has to be better about that, but it feels like
I also think that like Kyler and Russ, I really do think this is a byproduct of baseball, them playing baseball. Like when they start running, they're like Lamar gets vertical very fast. And it's like, look, like, and those guys sort of, like they just see the field better. I feel like Lamar is like faster, maybe, but you know what I mean? All right, let's move on to the next game. Oh, by the way, Tyler Bass, 54 yard field goals or longer. Yep, I assume Breach would bring that up, but he didn't.
Breach dunked on himself.
Yep. Oh, we missed. Dolphins 29, Chargers 21. Oh boy. Gonna have Dolphins fans up in the mentions tomorrow. Tua Tagovailoa had 5 touchdown passes and 0 interceptions this season, has won each of his first 3 career starts and joins Carson Wentz from 2016 as the only rookie quarterbacks to win their first 3 starts and throw 0 picks in the Super Bowl era. He is just the second Dolphins quarterback in franchise history to go 3-0 in his first 3 starts. Can you name the other one?
It's not Bob Greasy, I don't think, because that team stunk when he began. Dan Marino, David Woodley?
It was someone random. It was 90s, late 90s.
Breach reads the
Jay Fiedler?
No, I didn't read it. I think I actually saw it. Late 90s. Was it on the broadcast?
Probably.
You
are right. It's somebody random from the late 90s.
Not Jay Fiedler?
Oh, my gosh.
Rock Heward?
AJ?
Oh, you got it kind of right.
It's the other Heward?
Yeah.
Damon Heward. Oh, that teamwork. That's great teamwork, Wilson.
Damon Heward from 1999. What do we think here? Are the Dolphins for real?
Yep.
Oh, boy.
What do you mean? Oh, why? What'd you say about the Dolphins?
Oh, I just picked against them, and some Dolphins blogger named Big E, like, tweeted something about me, and I've had Dolphins fans like all over me for the entire weekend. It's really weird. Like, somebody DM'd me was like, nobody messes with Big E. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Like, is this how Prisco felt in like 2001 when I'm like, we showed up? He's like, these friggin' bloggers.
Yeah, he still feels that way. Yeah. Look, Brian Flores is coach of the year. Yeah. I don't even know who's number 2. I'm sure there's someone there.
Tomlin.
I mean, Mike Tomlin would like a word at
90. But I mean,
listen, you throwing
no,
your own
but
coach?
The Dolphins were 0-7 last year. They started 0-7.
I mean, Kevin Stefanski deserves some love.
Just get out of here. They started.
The Browns are 6-3.
Look at it this way. So they started 0-7. They went 5-4. And what are they now? 6-3?
6-3.
Yeah. So they're 11-7 in their last 18 games after starting 0-7. Like, I did the math right. That's amazing given that this team everyone thought was straight up dog doo doo 12 months ago.
Yep.
Well, and he benched his quarterback in the middle of the season, and it was probably the riskiest decision that any coach has made all year.
He traded for Josh Rosen last year, and we were yelling, why aren't you playing Josh Rosen if you get up a second-round pick? So two sort of weird quarterback situations that have worked out in their favor.
I will say that it benefited them that they started on the Chargers' side of the field 6 times in this game.
Well, the very first Chargers drive ended in a block punt touchdown.
A block punt, and they started on the Chargers' one-yard line. Is that a good place to start a drive on your opponent's one-yard line? I think so.
Did you read the stat about one score losses? Every one of their losses this year has been by one score, the Chargers.
The Chargers are 2-7.
And they've lost since 2019. They lead the league with 15 one-score losses.
Somebody's reading the recap notes.
Oh, those are from stats department.
I will say this was a backdoor one score loss.
Yeah, you know, like, they got blown out in this game.
They were down 15.
Oh, you know,
no.
We're not going to make this about the Chargers. This is about the Dolphins and Tua. If you're a Dolphin, so the Dolphins are 3-1 to win the division now. If you're a Dolphins fan, you're feeling like you got something cooking, right?
Of course.
Absolutely.
Why wouldn't you?
I'm not saying you shouldn't. I like watching Tua, watching that game, seeing Tua play, like he has it. I don't know that he's like
fire in the belly.
Prisco said he didn't, but like, I don't know if he's playing perfect football, but he just makes electric plays and you just want to watch. It reminds me of
started off with is it keeps being my worry since the bye. So you said, you know, the Dolphins got 6 possessions that started in Chargers territory, and every week it was against the Rams. They went up a bunch because they got a special teams touchdown, a defensive touchdown. I was like, well, Tua could have thrown 3 passes. It didn't matter. They were going to win this game even if Brinson was quarterback because the defense was so dominant. And it was like, you know what? We'll get to see how good he is when they play the Cardinals. Again, we get a defensive touchdown. We get these amazing defensive plays and you're still not, you know, Tua looked a lot better. He was a key to the win, but you're still not sure how good he is. And you're like, well, maybe we'll see it against the Chargers. And it's the same thing where you definitely see the flashes of talent, but it's not clear. You know, the jury's still not out on how good he is, how good he can be, or, you know, if this was basically the defense is playing so well that it doesn't matter. And Tua is able to kind of get used to playing at the NFL level. And so, I mean, I think the Dolphins are probably the third best team in the AFC right now.
Whoa. What?
That's insane.
Yeah.
You see the Dolphins are the third best team in the AFC?
You just got finished saying you don't know what to make of Tagovailoa.
Well, and I'm saying they're winning, even though I don't, and I think he's got the flashes of talent
there.
And
take them over.
Puts it all together, they're going to be unstoppable.
What is he talking about?
Don't fall for it.
So you would take them over? Oh my God. Oh my gosh. Are you seeing what Cam Newton is wearing?
No.
he's dressed like a genie.
Old lady?
No, I don't know. I've never seen this before. This is incredible.
I'm sure you'll tweet it any moment. I'll watch it then.
I will.
So read off
with a poll. Who would look better in this, Wilson or Breach?
Read off the teams.
He's wearing like a Shriner's like hat or like all a. Right.
Don't get sidetracked. Read off the teams to Breach that he thinks are better. That he thinks are better
in the AFC.
The Bills.
I said the AFC.
I'm assuming Pittsburgh and Kansas City are your top two.
That's my top two.
Bills.
No.
I would take the Dolphins right now.
Colts.
I would take
get
the Dolphins
out
right
of
now.
Town.
The Ravens.
I would take the Dolphins.
Ravens.
I take the Dolphins.
He hesitated.
And then I remember Sunday night game against the Patriots, so I went with the Dolphins.
The Raiders.
Oh, the Dolphins, easy.
Yeah, don't do that.
The Browns?
No.
The Dolphins would smash them.
You're going the wrong way. You're going the wrong way. I just didn't know where we're going.
I mean, where do you think the Dolphins are? What they've done has been, their defense has just been lights out. It's been so good. It's been fun to watch, especially if you have them on your fantasy roster. Been even more fun. I do not have them on fantasy roster, but I played against them.
They're good. I mean, like I do think that we haven't seen Tua truly tested.
Yes, that's true.
Like that's a concern.
I think what happened is that Breach got an upgrade. Breach bought 4,000 is all in on the Dolphins. He's done.
Oh, Steven Ross for a bigger check than Jerry Jones.
That's right. There we go. He got it.
Thanks, Steven.
Thank you, Steven. All right, yeah. Now the Dolphins are awesome. They're fun to watch. I think Tua's only going to get better. We'll see what happens. And, you know, Breach sort of alluded to it. If he has a bad game, how does he bounce back? But I mean, the defense and special teams are helping him out, and Brian Flores is crushing it, and that's a huge thing. I mean, if you buy into what your coach is telling you to do, see Matt Rhule, things seem to go a lot better, and that seems to be the case with the Dolphins.
And their next three games: Broncos, Jets, Bengals.
2-1.
Is Anthony Lynn getting fired?
Good boy. I mean, I was talking about this earlier on Sunday. That's a great job. Like, if you're Eric Bieniemy or whomever may come in.
Eric Bieniemy drafted by the Chargers.
Oh, yeah. And he's an offensive guy. They have a ton of offensive weapons. They'll get Derwin James back next year. You can't lose 15 one-score games in two seasons or a season and a half. I mean, that's bonkers. And I don't know what the reason is, but – he seems to get outcoached frequently.
They play the Jets in week 11. If they lose that game, you have to get rid of them, right?
There's no way they're losing that game. I don't think.
They lost to the Browns when the Browns were winless.
I will say this.
Oh, that's embarrassing.
Justin Herbert said after the game, I'm sure he said it very nicely because he's a very nice person, that the game plan was to run on early downs going into the matchup. And that to me just screams, what are we doing? And that's not Anthony Lynn. He's not making the game plan, but he's the head coach. I mean, that's where the buck stops, to, you know, bring out the old cliche. So, yeah, that's not great. He's got to win some football games.
He's in a tough spot. Justin Herbert playing really well, but it doesn't matter if you're losing games every week. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, we'll rip through the rest of the games.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right, so the Saints dominated the 49ers after a slow start. Saints covered the 9.5. The under hit here as well. Alvin Kamara went off as he is wont to do. But maybe the biggest storyline from this, because it was a blow. I mean, it was sort of a blowout. Like the 49ers had a lead, and I guess it wasn't a total blowout. Like the 49ers were.
They're up 10-0, I think, right?
Yeah, and they were rolling right along, and they had two punt returns fumbled, which, you know, never helps your case. But the bigger story is that Drew Brees left the game at halftime and was replaced by Jameis Winston. Brees has had a rib injury. He got blasted by my boy Kentavious Street for his first career sack, picked up a personal foul penalty that was sort of.
Was that a personal foul, though?
No.
Let me put it this way. If Cam Newton had gotten sacked that way, is that a flag?
No, they're not even. The ref's not even reaching for the flag or thinking about
it. I didn't think it was personal foulable. What did you think, Breach?
No, I did not think it was personal foul.
Yeah. It was like incidental contact that he drove him into somebody.
That's
else.
A Peyton Manning, Tom Brady, Drew Brees penalty all day long.
Absolutely. And that didn't help the 49ers case either. Like, but Jameis came in and now, just see Jeff Duncan, says, I've read Drew Brees' body language and speech inflection for 15 years, and I don't recall him ever sounding like this. The concern was evident in his tone and demeanor. It speaks to his leadership and professionalism that he took the time to address the media after being injured. Do we think Drew Brees could miss serious time for the second straight year in a row?
I heard reports afterwards, and maybe reports is wrong. Speculation, maybe it's just one game. It seems weird that he appeared more serious to Jeff Duncan on Sunday night than last year when his broken finger kept him out for 5 games. But Jameis Winston didn't look bad. Didn't have any turnovers, which was a rare sight in Tampa Bay. It probably helps to have a really good defense and a lot of playmakers around you, although you can make that argument in Tampa Bay for sure.
He looks so much thinner in the Saints uniforms.
Wearing number 2 will do that to you. It's like Dennis Dixon, number 2. Or Aaron Brooks. Aaron Brooks was number 2. There you go. So yeah, we'll see how they go. I thought it was interesting that they turned to Jameis. They didn't turn to Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill didn't attempt to pass. He ran it a bunch, sometimes as a quarterback. And the other thing was that Brees was on the sidelines sort of talking up Sean Payton like he wanted to go back in. So yeah, we'll find out how serious. I don't understand, the mechanics of rib injuries and how long they could keep you out. Because typically people play with broken ribs, it just hurts a lot. And sometimes, you know, they're out for a little bit.
Well, I think that's the issue, is that because they hurt a lot, and sometimes the pain's so excruciating, like, you know, it might hurt when you throw. We hear about guys wearing the flak jackets so to minimize the pain they feel whenever they get hit. But you're a quarterback, you get hit so often that you're out there, it's easy to re-injure the rib. So I think Breeze's thought process is like, look, I'm over 40 years old. My body's already falling apart. I can't be playing with broken ribs. So I would think if I'm the Saints that I'm looking at my schedule and I'm saying, you know what, let's bench Drew for 2 weeks, let him heal and see where we are after that. Cause they have the Falcons and the Broncos coming up. Those are two games I think they could win with Jameis Winston. They could also go 0-2 with Jameis Winston cause he might throw 6 interceptions against the Broncos defense. You never know, but they could absolutely go 2-0. You reassess, that gives Drew Brees 3 weeks to heal. And if he needs more than that, then you have another game against the Falcons. Then you have a game against the Eagles. So you play a bunch of teams that currently have a losing record over the next 4 weeks. So there is time and room for you to maybe pick up a few wins without Drew Brees while letting him heal. Cause I think you need him in the playoffs. You don't want Jameis Winston as your starting quarterback in the playoffs.
Let me ask you this, Breach and Brinson, because last year we didn't know anything about Teddy Bridgewater in terms of him being a backup. You feel more comfortable with Jameis or with unknown Teddy, if you can sort of go back in time and try to think about how you felt about Teddy before he played pretty well?
I feel more comfortable. I mean, well, it's like, are you more comfortable in a Honda Accord, or are you more comfortable in like on a motorcycle with jet rockets? Which I'm more comfortable in the Honda Accord. I know that I can get somewhere faster on the motorcycle with jet rockets, but that the probability that I will suffer a life-threatening injury on the way there, or that we'll just drive off the side of the road, is much higher. So, I'm more comfortable with Teddy.
Huh. All right. Yeah, I don't know.
I just want to touch on the 49ers real quick, because Merenzen, you touched on this briefly, was that I actually thought they could have won this game. Those two muffed punts literally changed the whole entire game around. One of them came in the first half, and right, so, you know, you're the 49ers, you're about to get possession, boom, a ball hits the ground, bounces off one of your blockers, the Saints recover it, and then the Saints only needed 21 yards to score a touchdown, because that's how close they were to the end zone after recovering that. The second half, somehow you have another muffed punt. This time, the Saints only had to drive 22 yards for a touchdown. So two of New Orleans touchdowns were on TD drives that were 22 yards or less, and they were both set up by muffed punts. If those don't happen, who knows what happens in this game? Because it was actually, it was pretty close between these two teams, except for the two muffed punts.
You know, we talk about a lot about teams quitting after it's clear they're going to be out of things. The 49ers don't quit. Kyle Shanahan has that team playing hard. They're doing it with second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth string players, and they're still competing. And as Breach mentioned, they go into New Orleans and they had a chance to win the game, made some mistakes, but it's not like they're folding up shop like we see from, you know, a lot of teams. Like, the Jets have given up clearly.
Gave up in like week three.
Yeah. Who are some other teams that have given up? Like the Chargers haven't given up, but I feel like if Kyle Shanahan was coaching that team, they would have two losses.
The Cowboys. So,
Cowboys, you feel like they've given up. So, yeah, credit to them for that, at least, the 49ers.
But the Saints, well, do you think the 49ers, they're done, right? There's no way.
They're their test.
They're doing anything.
They don't have to. How? That's like me and you and Brinson out there trying to help that team win football games. It's just not going to happen.
Well, we can go. Yeah, I mean, I think they're toast. They're 4-6. They're, and everybody else is 6-3. They're toast. And they don't have Kittle. He's done. They don't have Garoppolo. He's done.
They're 4-6. If Adam Gase was 4-6 right now, he would have a 40-year contract extension.
If Adam Gase was 4-6 right now, we'd be like, is he the coach of the year?
First go.
Let's move on to the Rams and Seahawks, where we can finish talking about the NFC West. Two of those 6-3 teams that we mentioned. The Rams won 23-16. Of course, covered the 2.5 points, the under of 55 hit. Boy, this game did not go over, and that was pricey for somebody on this podcast. The top fantasy performer was Malcolm Brown, obviously. Russell Wilson, 7 turnovers the last two games. It's the first game since 2016 where he had 0 touchdown passes and multiple interceptions, and just the 4th game like that in his career. The Seahawks are now technically 3rd in the NFC West. Big deal, huge deal, overreaction to a single game. What do we think?
So here's the thing. It's a huge deal with the caveat that I'll explain in a second. Because here's what I've been saying every week for 9 weeks. Don't worry. Just let Russ cook. Let him do his thing. The defense can be terrible. Jamal Adams and Carlos Dunlap, they'll help things. And they can just be, if the defense is just slightly below average, Russell will take care of everything else. DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Chris Carson, so on and so forth. Turns out that ain't true. Russell Wilson can't do everything. And if he's off just a little bit, and we've sort of said this in recent weeks, it'll be tough to win football games. Now they're just getting the doors blown off. But here's the good news for this team. What's that?
There's good news.
This is great news. So, they have the Cardinals next week. That ain't good news. After that, Eagles, Giants, Jets, football team. Then they have the Rams again, and then the 49ers. So that's 6 wins with the NFC East, the football team, and the 49ers to finish it, right? 1, 2, 3, 4.
The NFC East, the Jets, and the 49ers.
And if they split with the Rams, Cardinals, both of those games are at home.
Well, they should get, at worst, 5 more wins.
Worst case, 5 more wins. So that gets them to 11, and there's a chance they win 12. So even with the world's worst defense, the galaxy's worst defense, they're staring 11 wins in the face.
Yeah. I mean, worst case scenario, like absolute worst case scenario would be 10 wins. And even then, I think you're getting in the playoffs with 10 wins. So yeah. And the other thing is, you have a Thursday night game against the Cardinals. That's a team you probably should have beaten the first time around, but you blew a lead, went to overtime, and lost on another, Murray miracle. So I think if you're Seattle, you just say, all right, if we can somehow get into this Thursday game, it's at home, it's in prime time. We do real well in that situation. If we can beat Arizona, we got those games that Ryan just listed coming up. That's the one we need to steal. So I think if you're the Seahawks, you're obviously not thrilled right now, but you fix everything with one win on Thursday.
And yeah, I mean, that's true. I will say this. I do think that, like, so they started 5-0 and they're 1-2 in their last three games. Their five wins to start the season were against the Falcons, Patriots, Cowboys, Dolphins, and Vikings. Now the Dolphins win looks pretty good. What's that?
They're 1-3 in their last four. Throw that one in there.
Oh, excuse me. 1-3 in their last four. Yeah. PFR hadn't updated. And they're basically 1-3 since the bye. Like, I get that the Dolphins look pretty good now, but they weren't that great of a football team then. They sort of hung in there. The Vikings have improved a little bit, and the Seahawks beat them, but they were bad then. The Seahawks beat them by one. They barely beat the Cowboys. They barely beat the Patriots. They throttled the Falcons. I get that. You know, they took care of business against the 49ers, but, I mean, what are we talking about here? 2 weeks ago. You know, the good teams that they've played have beaten them. That's a problem.
Brinson, are you saying they're frauds? Say it.
Oh.
Say it.
I mean, I think the Seahawks are sort of a paper tiger.
They're a paper tiger. This is a Super Bowl team that's going to win 10 or 11 games and struggle to get very far in the playoffs, which is they should be deep in the playoffs because this is the year Russell's being allowed to throw the football, but the defense is so historically terrible that he can't – it's not enough. He can't do it every week.
Jalen Ramsey, by the way, matched up with DK Metcalf. This is via ESPN. Matched up with DK Metcalf on 30 routes. Four targets, two catches, 28 receiving yards for DK. He got locked down by Jalen Ramsey.
Should have drafted J.J. Arcega-Whiteside.
Seahawks are 0-3 this season when they commit multiple turnovers and 6-0 when they have one or fewer. That's sort of the story. Like, Russ has to be perfect. And, you know, to that Ramsey point, let's give the Rams their due. The Rams are a good football team.
I don't know what to make of Jared Goff, but he
lights up the Seahawks for some reason.
That defense is really good, and that's huge. I mean, we were talking about defenses with Tua having the luxury of having that defense, and the same thing for Jared Goff, who, in my mind, only is going as far as Sean McVay can drag him.
And well, Sean McVay does really well at dragging him when they're playing the Seahawks.
God, you love to talk about Sean McVay.
5-1 in his last six games against Seahawks, Brinson. Write that fact down.
I got a funner fact for you, Breach.
That can't be funner than what I just said.
Lamar Jackson's 1-7 when trailing at halftime. Sean McVay is 31-0 when winning at halftime.
It's a lock.
That's
halftime lock.
That is good to know. So bet the money line on Sean McVay if he's winning at halftime. Jared Goff, 27-37, 302 yards. Josh Reynolds, the leading receiver, 8 catches, 94 yards. Goff should have had a couple touchdown passes. They got down, like Tyler Higbee screwed up one. And then like, I think Daryl Henderson had a touchdown run from the 1 yard line and Malcolm Brown had two red zone rushes. The running game wasn't great, but they let Goff throw a lot and they like credit to Sean McVay. That's what we said leading up to the game. Like if the Rams are willing to let, you know, do what the Bills did. Come out and throw the ball early and often and let Goff sling it around, they're probably going to have better success against the Seahawks who struggle to stop anybody in the pass. Yeah, this is a good defense, and they play the Buccaneers next. That's a really interesting battle for the NFC.
Yeah, I want to see that. How would you rank 49ers at last? How would you rank the rest of that division in terms of your feelings about who's where?
If I were betting on it right now, and like I got, let's like I win a bet if I can correctly order how the division finishes.
Yeah.
I will take the Rams, Cardinals, Seahawks, and then the 49ers.
Breach.
I will take the Seahawks, Rams, and then Cardinals. But I do think all three of them are going to make the playoffs.
You think Seahawks are the best team in the division?
I think they're going to finish first in the division.
I'm going.
That doesn't mean I think they're the best team.
I'm going Cardinals, Rams, Seahawks.
Do we just all get different answers?
Yeah.
Okay.
If I were picking today, I would pick the Cardinals because I picked them to win the division before the season started.
I already picked them, so you can't go back too bad.
I did it before the season.
You know what's crazy? If the Cardinals had lost, if that Hail Mary didn't happen, right now they are the third seed in the NFC playoffs. If they don't catch the Hail Mary, they're out of the playoffs. They are the eighth seed.
Well, guess what? If
that's how close everything is right now.
Appearance on the Rams against the Saints get the other Super Bowl. So, I mean, these things happen.
No, Ryan, that's not true. Because there was still game time left.
There was still game time left after the Cardinals throw.
Oh, you just dunked on yourself again.
2 seconds.
Wallace took it in his hands and said, up and away.
Ooh. I haven't played it all the way through in a while. All right, Packers and Jaguars. The Packers snuck by Jacksonville 24-20. Obviously, the Jaguars covered as 13.5-point dogs. The under hit, Aaron Rodgers, 29 fantasy points. Marquez Valdes-Scantling at 20 fantasy points. I was combing through our CBS Sports research packet from Sean Ahern. I think Ahern, did I pronounce that right? Sean and the boys put this one together. And this stat made me laugh so hard. It is the Jaguars have started 1-8 for the first time since 2014. I don't know why this cracks me up.
Because most teams, it's like they're 1-8 for the first time since 1997.
The Steelers are 9-0 for the first time in franchise history. It's like the Jags are 1-8 for the first time in 5 years. Like, yeah. Like I don't know if that's like a good stat or a bad stat.
I feel like I'm surprised it wasn't more recently. So
I sort of was too, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, I thought it'd be like, oh, since like 16 or something. By the way, Devontae Adams now has 741 receiving yards and 9 receiving touchdowns this year. He joins Marvin Harrison from 1999 and Randy Moss from 2007 as the only players in the Super Bowl era to have 700 receiving yards and 9 or more receiving touchdowns in their first 7 games of the season. Now, first games they played, because he was obviously injured.
Yeah, so the Jaguars had this game close. They were playing it, they played it tight for much of the game, and they had opportunities. And Devontae Adams had a fumble early in the game that led to a Jaguars touchdown. James Robinson had 109 rushing yards. And it's sort of like the Packers didn't want to be there, even though it was a home game. They had weather there, too, at Lambeau Field. But again, when you're a good football team, you cannot want to be there and still find ways to win. It wasn't an inspiring win, but look, I feel much better about the Packers who had an uninspiring win than I do against the Seahawks who had we have one player on our team loss and our defense is straight up doo-doo. So
yeah, they took care of business.
That's where I'm at. The Jacksonville, I mean, they are what they are. They fought, they made some plays, they were opportunistic. They have Jake Luton playing quarterback. So. You know,
what do you think about the Jaguars playing the Steelers next week?
I don't feel great about it. It's the same way I felt about the Cowboys playing the Steelers last week and how I felt about them playing the Bengals on Sunday. It's just one of those opportunities for a team that's not as good as the team they're facing to show why. And we saw that. I mean, the Jaguars did that against the Packers. So they're going to have some confidence. They're playing at home.
Jake Luton 2-0 against the spread now as a starter. Would you take, what do you think? Jaguars plus 13.5? Oh, it's down to 10. Ah!
I'm taking the Jags. I took the Bengals on Sunday too. Shouldn't have done that. Thanks, Breach.
I'm taking the Steelers. What?
I listened to Breach too. I knew the Steelers were going to roll. Yeah. So stupid.
Whoop my face.
Yeah. I too.
Are you guys worried at all about the Packers sort of half arson it?
No, this was totally, you go through the motions, you walk out with a win and that's it. Like this game, as long as you win, it doesn't mean anything. We're not going to look back. Like when we're picking that first round playoff game, we're not going to say, you know what? They struggle against Jacksonville in week 10. I think I'm going to pick against the Packers in the wild card round.
Let me bring up weekly.
I disagree with that.
All right, go ahead.
They did this against the Washington football team last year.
I don't remember.
So it was week 14.
That clouded your feelings about them?
Yeah, but I thought they were frauds last year. I don't think they're frauds this year.
What's different about them this year than last year?
They're one of the top three teams in the NFC this year, and they were not last year.
Personnel-wise, what's different?
They were 13-3 last year. They were the number 2 seed in the NFC.
Yeah, I know what their record was.
Reach has got the hat trick.
I know what their record and seed was. I'm telling you from my personal opinion, they weren't, and that's it. They got smoked in the NFC title by a team that was far better than them.
Who were the three better teams?
The 49ers.
Dolphins, and who else?
I'm waiting for the other two.
The Chiefs.
You said the NFC teams.
Oh, I thought I said all of them.
No.
The Saints. Probably the Seahawks.
Probably the Seahawks.
I don't remember all of last season, but I would put the Seahawks in there.
He's going for the record, ladies and gentlemen.
They were not one of my three personal top three favorite NFC teams. Name the other three. I don't remember all the season. What do I look
Ask
like?
Ask me questions. Hey, let me put this to you guys. Alan Lazard is going to come back. MVS had a huge game. I still wish they had Will Fuller. I bet Aaron Rodgers feels the same. Do you guys feel differently?
Every week with this Will Fuller.
Every week is coming up. Well, look at it this way. If you're Will Fuller, Dre Hopkins got traded and he's having the time of his life. And Will Fuller stuck on that.
I mean, from Will Fuller's perspective, yeah, he probably wishes he was in Green Bay. Yeah, I think they would rather have Will Fuller. I still maintain I wouldn't give up the second.
Do it for a second rounder. All right.
I still, yeah, we don't need.
Wait, Brinson, but finish your point. So they struggled against Washington last year.
What was that?
So keep going.
Well, I mean, down the stretch, they beat Washington 20-15 at home, and it was like, what is this team doing? Like, why don't they? This team doesn't seem to possess the extra gear. So,
my theory, I think, is I'll bring it up again. There are no good teams. That's part of it. But also, I'm sort of breached. It's one of these games, the weather was crappy. No one wanted to be there. It's the Jaguars. You win the game and get out of there.
I mean, all right. So the last five games for the Packers are a humiliating loss to the Buccaneers, a 15-point win over the Texans, which is good. Texans are terrible. Awkward loss to the Vikings out of nowhere. They beat down the 49ers without any of their players, and then they barely snuck by the Jaguars at home. Like,
Well, the Vikings loss was Dalvin Cook ran for 40 million yards.
Well, that's a bit of a red flag if you're talking about this being a top team in the
NFL. Defense. This is the Seattle Seahawks with just slightly better defense.
Well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's what I think they are. I think they have the best receiver, but worse total weapons. They have a good quarterback, but not as good as Russell Wilson. Although he might.
Brinson, which NFC teams are better than them right now? Like, who, if you're concerned about the Packers, who's
New Orleans, who's the one? Tampa Bay,
New Orleans that the Packers already beat.
Yes. Dunk on. Just play the music.
He gritted it out.
Music.
Four to one.
I mean, I think New Orleans. I mean, let's see what happens with Drew Brees, but I think New Orleans
is 100% taking the Saints in that rematch. Yeah. He didn't tell you that.
Not with Jameis Winston.
The Rams are better, and the Buccaneers are better.
No, stop it. The Rams are not better. Are you crazy?
Rams are better, more balanced. I think the Rams would beat the Packers.
Have you seen the Rams?
In what sport?
Well, the Rams will run all over the Packers, and the
Jared
Packers
Goff
will struggle against that defense. If you throw Jalen Ramsey on Davante Adams. Were you going to throw the ghost to Will Fuller?
Yeah, see, that's when the Will Fuller is going to come up and bite you.
You know what? And we knock Green Bay for letting Jacksonville stay close. This is the same Jacksonville team that beat Brinson's Colts and had the Titans on the ropes before Steven Gostkowski hit like a 49-yard field goal with a minute left to win that game. So they've been giving
the Jaguars are frisky. I just said that.
Yeah, they've been giving good teams fits, and then somehow they get blown out by average teams.
Also, like not the same Jacksonville team as those because they changed their quarterback and now they have a rookie seventh rounder. Anyway, I think Arizona might be better than
Jacksonville. Definitely.
Yeah, they are definitely better than Jacksonville.
All right. Moving along to those Buccaneers that I mentioned. Woo, you will not like Tom Brady when he's angry. And he was angry on Sunday as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers walloped the Panthers 46-23. The Bucs covered the over hit. The Bucs almost hit it by themselves. Tom Brady had 37 fantasy points. Ronald Jones 23, including a 98-yard touchdown scamper. Teddy Bridgewater 22 and left with an injury that is not believed to be extremely serious. It's also to the other knee, not the one that was reconstructed.
It didn't look terrible, but that's easy for me to say. It wasn't like all the gruesome injuries we've seen this year. He just got hit low and he left.
The Panthers are the first team since 1950 to allow one punt or fewer in four straight games, extending their NFL record. Is that good?
What are you going to do?
They have only forced two punts total since week 7. It is week 10.
Maybe
you cannot win games if you cannot force the other team to punt. Like, it's mind-boggling how this is even possible.
So the Panthers have lost 5 straight games, and I don't know. I'm not getting worked up about it if I'm a Panthers fan.
You know what's funny, and we'll talk about this more later, but this is basically the reverse of the Giants, and everyone has been dunking on Joe Judge the first. They have the same record, I think. Maybe the Giants even a better record. I can't remember. But everyone's like, oh, Matt Rule's doing a great job, and Joe Brady, everyone's buying in. And now
the Giants are ahead of the Panthers in the
season. There you go. And then the
Giants
started terribly, and everyone's like, ugh, Dave Gettleman, ugh, Daniel Jones, ugh, what is Joe Judge doing? And now they've sort of turned the corner. I think that team is buying into what Joe Judge is talking. We can talk about that later as well. But I think I'm with you on the Panthers. I'm not worried about them. No one, we thought this was going to be the worst team in football, somehow worse than the Jets, and that's all on us for being idiots. But they are buying in. Teddy Bridgewater's playing extremely well. Robbie Anderson is secretly one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. DJ Moore or the other one, Curtis Samuel. Curtis Samuel started to shine a little bit.
Moore had a big game this week. Different guys pop up every week.
Yeah.
Samuel was last week. Moore was this week.
And McCaffrey hasn't played. Came back for a game got hurt last week. So there are reasons for optimism. The defense is young. They'll get better. But yeah, the whole punting thing is funny.
Well, they trotted out. I mean, the whole thing was that they drafted they used every single one of their draft picks on defensive players. And they're starting all these younger guys. You knew that Kawan Short's hurt. You knew they were going to stink. And it took a little while for them to actually be bad. They're trying hard. Offensively,
they're 17 and a half. If they played
this is a close game. It was a close game. Yeah.
30 minute football games. It'd be great.
That's right. Is it Ronald Jones, 23 Ks, 192 yards. Tom Brady, 28, 39, 341 yards, 3 touchdowns and 1 rushing touchdown. A monster game. Antonio Brown, 69 receiving yards on 7 catches.
Oh, the old Gronkometer.
Yeah. And, Chris Godwin, 6 catches, 92 yards as well. This was, the Bucs just poured it on. They were just a better team. The Buccaneers are still really good.
Yeah.
But that loss to the thing about the Bucs is they lost to the Bears, who were good defense, and they lost to the Saints, who played really good defense. So I sort of worry how are they good against good defenses? That's a concern of mine.
Breach, do you feel better long term about the Packers or the Bucs? Because I'm not sure.
Long term, 5 years, or long term, the rest of this season? Playoff run this year. I think the Buccaneers, because it's one of those where I think we talked about it a little bit last week, but if the Buccaneers and Packers played in the playoffs, I think the Buccaneers would roll them again. It's one of those, we saw Green Bay struggle against San Francisco last year and then turn around and play them again in the postseason. And people kind of talk themselves, oh, Green Bay will win this time because they know what they did wrong the first time. No, San Francisco stepped on their throat again and demolished them. So I think that's what would happen if the Buccaneers, and I think that's the weird thing about the NFC this year. And that's why we can't figure out who the best team is. You could make a strong argument for 4 different teams. And it's because, just matchups. I think the Packers are a bad matchup. The Buccaneers are a bad matchup for the Packers, and the Saints are a bad matchup for the Buccaneers. So those are the teams you want to avoid in the playoffs. So if you're Tampa, you're thinking, hey, if I can avoid New Orleans, I can make a Super Bowl run. If you're Green Bay, you want to avoid Tampa Bay. So there's just all this weirdness, because everybody has a weakness. And as you said, every week for 10 weeks, Ryan, there are no good teams.
You know who also has a weakness? The Eagles. And that weakness is Carson Wentz. The Eagles got bludgeoned by the Giants, 27-17. Giants covered. Of course, they were dogs. The under hit. Daniel Jones, the top fantasy performer, 21. Wayne Gallman, 17. Jones, this is Daniel Jones' first win against a team since he played against the Buccaneers, his first win against a team that's not Washington.
Congratulations, Daniel Jones.
All right, are we giving
2-16 is the starter versus teams not called Washington. This is Carson Wentz's first game this season without a turnover, and the Eagles failed to convert a third down on Sunday, 0 of 9 for just the second time since 1991.
All right, we're going to get a playoff update from Debo.
Give us your little, I'm eating Xanax, gobbling Xanax on Sunday night, trying to sound optimistic update, Debo.
I'm always optimistic.
You are disturbingly optimistic.
Yeah, I mean, with that being said, the Giants still have 2 more losses than the Eagles at this point. I said it after the Bengals game. The Eagles are going to win this division at 6-9-1. There's nothing 7-8 weeks later that I feel any differently now. Never fun to lose to the Giants. Daniel Jones looked good. If you would have told me before the game that there would be 0 combined turnovers, I would have called you a liar. But I don't know. I don't think Carson Wentz played good, and that's a problem when you don't play good against the Giants. But I don't think he was bad. He was just average.
So I think Debo's exactly right. I think six wins wins this division. So here's the concern for me, because I've been on this Eagles bandwagon for a while now. Yeah, I mean, you can't lose that Giants game. Next week it's at Cleveland, Seattle, at Green Bay, Saints, at Cardinals. Where are the wins coming from there?
I mean, I think all season long the Eagles have kind of played to the level of competition, so I wouldn't be surprised if they keep it close with teams like the Packers and the Seahawks. I don't expect them to win those games, but they played close with the Steelers. They played close with the Ravens. I expect them to do the same there. Win your two remaining division games against Washington and Dallas, and then sneak in one more, and you're at that six, that magic number of six.
That's the math. You have to win one of those five incredibly tough games and then beat Dallas and football team.
They can beat Cleveland.
I would love for them to beat the Browns.
Who would you wager on right now, Breach? Eagles -160, Giants +275, Cowboys 7.5 to 1, and the WFTs 8 to 1.
What are the Giants?
+275.
Absolutely the Giants. I think last week we talked about how the Giants were +900 and thought they were the best value bet, like hands down. It was amazing they were +900. I think they're the best bet. I think they're the best team in this division, which doesn't say a lot because the division's absolutely horrible. Sorry, Debo. I didn't mean to insult your team right in front of you.
And they're 3-5-1. You're not telling them something you didn't know.
It's okay.
I think the Giants are the best team in this division. And you look at their schedule, they've had a bunch of close losses. And no, Ryan, I'm not going to say they could be, 6-4, 7-3, even though they could be. But that tells you how good the team is because they've gone toe to toe with a lot of good teams. They went toe to toe with the Rams. They probably should have beaten the Eagles the first time around. They almost beat the Buccaneers. So there's a lot of good losses, and it tells you that, hey, these remaining teams on their schedule that could be difficult, like the Seahawks, the Cardinals, the Browns, you know, maybe the Giants can beat those teams because they played so well against good teams earlier in the season.
So, Debo, let me ask you this, because I was confused. The Eagles scored their first touchdown, went for two, and got it, and that was great. Then they scored again late in the third quarter to make it 21-17, and instead of kicking the extra point, they went for two. What's the math Doug Peterson's doing?
You tell me. You're the analytics. I mean, my default at that point, I just say it's the chart. It's what the chart says. Like, I have no proof of that's what the chart actually says, but that's just what I tell myself. I think our boy Doug getting a little too cute there, but I do not understand that math. 21-17.
Sorry, go ahead, Debo.
Yeah, the Eagles make it 21-17. They have an opportunity to kick the extra point to make it 21-18, but they decide to go for two, get stopped, and it's a 4-point ball game at that point.
Yeah, he's on their touchdown with 5:20 left in the third quarter, Brinson.
Yeah, third quarter too. So it's, you know, if the Giants get another field goal, then the Eagles are still down a touchdown. But you know, we don't have access to that chart, but. Make it make sense. I don't know.
And that leads
so they could have gone
at 3 points
down 10. They score a touchdown. If they kick the extra point, they're down 3.
Right.
Correct.
They went for two and get it. So they're down 4.
And there's not a huge difference between being down 2 or 3, but there is a huge difference being down 4.
Right. You don't say.
Well, that's why it was such a weird decision.
I would guess here would be my guess.
It's going to be horrible what it is. Go ahead.
Probably. But I mean, if you've got something better, by all means, you know.
Kick a field goal. That's my kick the extra point. That's
what I'm saying that. So I wonder if their chart, cause you know, like Doug always goes for it. Like he does a thing where if you're down 14 and you score and you go for two, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. But what's the matter?
Well, what I'm saying is that. I wonder if the chart says go for two there because it increases your win. They're doing it like strictly on win probability. And so you go for two. So you'd be down two. So you can kick a field goal and win because the win probability in overtime basically equals out to 50%.
That's what it has to be. I fully believe that. I just don't have any semblance of belief.
It makes sense.
Correct. Yeah. I don't know how you get to that point, but, yeah, Doug, tough year for Doug.
Well, yeah, I mentioned that play because I saw it and it didn't make sense to me at the time. And also going back to my earlier point about Joe Judge, Giants seem to be sort of buying in to whatever it is he's selling. And it's,
I agree.
He seems like he's legit sort of implementing changes there. We'll see if he gets a new GM or whatever. But I think clearly his job's fine. But I think that Danny Dimes is sort of each week staves off the conversations about the Giants taking a draft pick because they continue to fall further down the draft board, which is good for him too.
And real quick, I just put a tweet in there from, looks like Ben Baldwin. I remember seeing it earlier today, that going for two gave the Eagles a 1.8% chance better of winning. So it was that close. But the problem there is that analytics strictly takes into what is going to help you win. So it's saying you shouldn't be playing for a tie, even though you're not going to tie. So my
explanation was correct.
Right. Yes. That's no, Brinson. Why Ryan looked at Brinson like, I didn't say it was incorrect.
I'm dunking on Ryan.
Ryan gave you the
goofy. Whatever it is, like, it's going to be stupid. I'll tell you that much.
It was, I mean, ask
it was spot on. Brinson, it was exactly correct.
Brinson was essentially correct, but the problem.
I wasn't dunking on Brinson.
So the issue though is that like, it's okay to be in a situation where you need to tie the game. You don't need to be taking the lead all the time. If you don't go down and score again, there's 5 minutes left. Would you rather be down 21-18 or 21-17? You want to be down 21-18 because then you can play for a field goal and then hopefully get another possession.
Right. So your chances of winning a football game are higher if you're up, if you're down two than if you're down three.
Really?
Because
that requires a huge long equation. You can't just go, oh, look at that number smaller than that number.
Because if you get the two, then now a field goal wins you the game.
No, we understand how the math works. And I wasn't calling you stupid, Brinson. I was saying whatever the reason for doing it, it's idiotic if you're doing it.
I thought you were saying whatever I say. It was like,
no, just the math. Doesn't. I mean, yeah.
I agreed with you. I was like, whatever. I mean, like, if I explain this and I'm right. So essentially at down, so they're down 10 and they score a touchdown to be down 4. Mm-hmm. Baldwin's win percentage calculator. He created a, it's his two point and like fourth down model that he created. And it's, I think it's, it again, like you can kind of tweak this stuff, you know. I mean, like anyway, go for two. It gives the Eagles a 45% win percentage, kick the extra point 43. But here's the problem. If you go, so the win percentage, if you fail on the extra point or go for two is 42% regardless. If you succeed, it's 43% versus 47 if you go for two. But this is the kicker for me. In this model, the success rate of going for two is 54%. The success rate of kicking the extra point is 93%. Like, I'm sure, I guess the math works out to where in that sense you would still want to go for two.
And you would go for two if you're risk seeking, because if you do the math, the extra point is slightly less than 1 point, and the other one going for it is slightly worth slightly more than 1 point, but you're taking on the risk of not being able to do it. So
I'm saying like, if I got a 93% chance of making a 3 point game, I'm taking that instead of the 54% chance of
that's
a 2 point game.
Yeah. I don't think Ben factored in Doug's trash ass play calling. So
Doug has not been in his bag this.
Doug is now used derisively. Doug is not a term of endearment anymore.
He made Carson play very by the book today, which turned out to be, not great either.
What, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your concern for Carson Wentz?
Long term.
Oh boy.
Like, sure. I'm saying you're saying like beyond this season?
Both.
I would say long term, it's croaching up on like a 4. I don't think there's any question that he'll be the week one.
It's like a normal person's 8.
Yeah. I don't think there's any question he'll be the week one starter in 2021. This season is super weird to see someone regress to that level when you've seen kind of his peaks at certain points. I'm not giving up. It's not Jalen Hurts' time quite yet.
Yeah, I think the one snap I saw from Jalen Hurts is he fumbled it. I don't know what else he did, but yeah, I think, I don't know. I just feel like my whole thing with the Eagles were, okay, Carson Wentz knows how to play with a crappy offensive line because he's used to it and doesn't know those receivers, and it just didn't look like that against the Giants. That concerns
me. Yeah, I mean, we could say we can move on after that, but Doug Peterson off the bye is not the same as everybody's boy Andy Reid off the bye. 1-4 now for Doug, and whatever that record is for Andy at this point, 18-2, something like that. Doug.
Mm. 1-4 off the bye is bad.
That is bad. What does he do during the bye week? Clearly not refine his analytical method.
Is he doing the Adam Gase Thanksgiving plan or something?
What is that?
That's where you act like you're really busy, don't have time for your family, and then show up and get blasted by the Raiders. Or the Bengals. Was it the Bengals? Who blasted them? Somebody blasted them.
You show up blasted, and that explains why you blasted other people.
No, it was last year. Gase was like, I mean, I didn't have time to hang out with my family. Like, I had to ditch my family on Thanksgiving, and then he got, like, lost to the Bengals by 30 points at home. The Lions beat the Washington football teamers 30-27 on a bomb from Matt Prater to end the game. The Lions covered -2.5. The over 45.5 hit. Matthew Stafford had 3 touchdown passes. DeAndre Swift, kind of a breakout game here for the rookie out of Georgia, who I believe did he rush for a touchdown or catch a touchdown? He caught a touchdown pass. 5 catches, 68 yards and a touchdown. 16 carries, 81 yards. Reports early on Sunday morning were that he was going to get a bunch of the workload, and that was turned out to be the case. Alex Smith may have sewn up his comeback player of the year award. 390 passing yards in this game. Terry McLaurin, another good game for him. Washington, I don't know what to say about that.
Reese probably watched this game. I think the reason that there was a possibility of a 59-yard field goal because Chase Young shoved Matthew Stafford, and that's the backbreaker. Like, you can't – it wasn't even a hard shove, but you can't shove him 4 steps into the – after the ball's been released. And that sort of turned the tide there. I'm happy for Alex Smith. Every time he runs, I'm like, please just go out of bounds. And I feel like actually the players on the team take it easy on him, and I'm fine with that. It's like when your granddad plays in the Turkey Day family football game. You're like, all right, we're not going to kill Pops. We're just going to take it easy on him. I'm fine with that. The Chase Young is a backbreaker.
Yeah.
The Lions led this game 24-3 with like 6 minutes left in the third quarter. And it seemed like it was going to be a blowout at that point. And then Alex Smith, it really felt like he got more comfortable as the game went on. Like, remember, this guy had not started a football game in more than 700 days. Like, imagine you finally prepare all week, you get out in the field, and then, they got off to a rough start. Washington did. They got down inside Detroit's 20-yard line and then ended up punting somehow. They got inside the 20-yard line and ended up punting.
Wait, what?
Yeah. They got down to Detroit's 14-yard line and then ended up facing a 4th-and-27 and punted the ball. it was total craziness. But it was cool to see Alex Smith lead that comeback. So I'll just say that the Lions, if they would have lost, they blew the game. It's a game they should have won after they were up 24-3, and they ended up winning it.
Briscoe says the Lions have to go to the playoffs for Patricia and Bob Quinn to save their jobs. Are you on board with that? What if they go 9-7 and miss the playoffs?
I don't think they get fired for 9-7.
Jim Caldwell got fired for going 9-7 back-to-back years. I don't know if you heard about that.
I'm sure there's something different about Matt Patricia and Jim Caldwell.
Do the Lions have any shot of going 9-7?
No.
Maybe.
How many more times do they play in the Redskins?
Put it in this thing! We need a sound drop for that. Oh, Lord. Cha-ching! I mean, they should have beaten the Bears in week 1.
No, don't start with that.
Oh, come on. They were up by...
Are they going to win 9 games?
So they have the Panthers next week, the Texans,
can win.
Bears, Packers, Titans, Bucks, and Vikings.
That's a no. They're not going to win.
I think they could win 3 more.
Yeah.
I guess I'm to 7.
That ain't
they
not.
They could steal 4 more.
Maybe they'll go undefeated. They'll be left.
Did they get fired if they go 8-8? I say no.
Why?
I'm not answering whether I think they should be fired or not.
I just don't understand the program is going backwards. What are we doing?
I mean, they're probably bad. I'm trying to find this. Did you see that article from Kalen Kaler?
Oh yeah, with the mimosas.
Yeah,
that about?
Like Lions players said they were so excited the 2019 season was ending and they wouldn't have to see Patricia again that they started getting drunk on mimosas before the last team meeting of the year. This is all from Kalen Kaylor Bleacher Report. And that is hilarious that the Lions players seem to have as much disdain for Patricia as you do, Wilson.
Real quick. On clean out day at the end of the 2018 season, there was a tangible sense of relief in the Lions locker room. It had been a long and difficult transition to first time head coach Matt Patricia's Patriot like culture. There was a lot of y'all have fun because I am gone. People talking about how there was no way they were going to re-sign back in Detroit. Then safety Glover Quinn says players blasted music that entire week, turning the locker room into a fun house, a quote fun house, because quote, guys were over it really. They were over the season. They were over everything. One player's agent had sent him champagne for a Christmas gift and he had kept it in his locker waiting for the right moment to uncork the celebration. Saying goodbye to Patricia, at least until OTA, seemed like just the reason to party. Before the Lions' last team meeting, mid-morning, a group of 10 to 15 players took orange juice from the cafeteria and mixed it with champagne to make mimosas. They chilled and sipped out of solo cups, finally relaxing after a season of long practices. I mean, basically, it's just they don't like him. And this is this long article about why.
That never works. Not the players, like the coaching. Like, we just talked about Matt Rhule. We talked about Joe Judge, Brian Flores. Like, this whole Bill Parcells Act, if there's any truth to it, just I don't think it works in 2020. I don't think. It doesn't get you very far, except that, you know, you get written up in Bleacher Report about players trying to get drunk just to deal with you.
Yeah.
And you're talking about bringing them back. All right. Well, 11-5, here we come.
I mean, it's okay. Anyway, we're still talking about these teams. Let's move on. The Steelers rolled the Bengals.
Oh, he missed.
36-10. That actually didn't miss. I'm just playing that again for some reason. Steelers by 6.5 covers. Thanks for nothing. Breach the over 45.5 hits. Ben Roethlisberger went bananas. Yeah, Johnson and Chase Claypool both had 17 fantasy points as well. Big Ben 37. Whew, huge game. And the Steelers rolled the Bengals. Wilson, your team won. Take your dunking lap.
Wait, before Ryan takes his dunking lap, I would like to say one thing. I honestly did not know what the final score of this game was because I stopped watching at 29-7. That's all.
Your boy, Zach Taylor Thomas, whatever his name is,
he never can
kicked a field goal down 30. It actually was 37-10, isn't it?
Yeah. It was 30.
You know what?
It was 37-10, but it was 37-7 or something.
It was 36-7. And you know what, Brinson? Maybe some people teased that point spread to 28 points and they lost some money there. Good for Zach Taylor.
He kicked a field goal down 36-7.
I would have done the same thing.
And then he basically took knees to end the game. It was pathetic.
I wouldn't have done that.
Joe Burrow.
He ran the ball with 2 minutes and 40 seconds left in the game and let the clock go down to the 2 minute warning and then ran two plays afterwards and just called the dogs off.
So, you know, I sort of, not joke, I'm serious. Big Ben is in the MVP conversation. And he's in the MVP conversation because he has, what does he have, 22 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. And he's playing at a pretty high level. How many passes? I'm trying to find his stats here for this year. Completing 69% of his throws. Oh, no, sorry. That was one game. Where's the – God, come on, stats. 68% of his throws. Thank you. 22-4. Typically in a Big Ben year, he'd have 10 to 12 interceptions by now and would have cost him 2 or 3 losses. So he's playing well, and the good news is, and, you know, Breach can tell you this, there are a ton of injuries on the Bengals. They lost at least one cornerback during the game. Roethlisberger's throwing the ball to Deontay Johnson, Juju Smith-Schuster, Claypool, Ebron, James Washington had a couple catches. So, I mean, he has so many weapons. The defense is, they had 2 turnovers, I think. Were they both on special teams, Breach? I can't remember. But Steelers had no turnovers, and Joe Burrow said that, and Joe, I love Joe Burrow. He's like, we're not going to win football games when I play terribly. And he hurt his ankle right before halftime. He got pushed into the bench, and he somehow rolled it up. And they asked him if he's going to come out. He goes, I'm not coming out. I'm not coming out for any reason. And that's what you want to hear from your franchise quarterback. But they got to do a better job protecting him. We've been saying that each and every week. So the Bengals are not going to make any noise this year, but I think they're going to be a good football team and at some point in the future.
Brian, they can still make noise this year. Don't write them off.
I know, using your math.
I mean, in the sense that, like, they might eat some Cincinnati chili and, like, fart a bunch.
They could win all the remaining games if this and that happens. That's me.
Could they beat Washington?
Yes.
Could they beat the Giants?
That's going to be a good game.
Could they beat the Cowboys?
Yeah, they should.
Could they beat the Texans?
What are you doing?
I'm just saying all those games are on their schedule. There's a lot of wins there.
What are you doing?
Did you have any, were you under any, impression that the Bengals would have a chance in this game? Cause, you know, we said last week that Steelers sucked against the Cowboys and they typically play down to their opponents.
I will be honest. After the Bengals fumbled the ball and lost it, they were down 12-0 at that point. And in my head, I'm like, it's over. If the Steelers score here, the game's over. I don't even need to watch the rest of this.
They did.
But then the Steelers went 3-and-out and they punted. I was like, okay, this is good. And then after the Steelers did that 3-and-out and punted, the Bengals drove 90 yards and scored a touchdown. All of a sudden it was 12-7. And I was like, all right, okay, this is interesting. This game might actually be good. And then the Steelers outscored them 24-3 the rest of the way and it was over.
T. Higgins is good. I'm angry that I fell for that again. I say that.
Yeah, me too. That was stupid.
He's good.
Look, the Steelers are really good. I don't think the Steelers are as good as their record.
No. They're no good teams.
Yeah. They're like the, are they the worst 9-0 team ever?
I guess. I mean, I don't even know who the other ones. Yeah, sure.
The last one, the last was the 2015 Panthers.
All the 9-0 teams, none of them won the Super Bowl. So it doesn't matter.
The Chiefs went 9-0 in 2013 and didn't even make it out of the wild card round.
Right, exactly.
This is a carbon copy of the Ravens Bengals game. Just a bigger brother with a decent defense flexing muscles on the little kid who is like riding a trike with training wheels around the block.
Yeah. No. Joe Burrow's gonna be good. T. Higgins is good.
Yeah, for sure.
It was AJ Green in this game. I didn't even see him anywhere, Breach.
5 targets, no catches.
Eesh. All right.
That is actually better than it sounds because it was worse than that.
Okay. Yeah. Yikes.
I'm worried about Joe Burrow's health.
Fair enough. He's tough and he wants to take a beating, but you gotta, I don't know how you figure it out. Where are you on the Zach Taylor conversation, Breach?
I don't think, I think being Tennessee, he's done well enough.
Ryan, have you heard of there's this place in Egypt. It's a river.
Denial.
Yes. Denial.
Where are you, Breach? I'm not asking you to read off his resume. Where is John Breach on Zach Taylor?
I think that Zach Taylor deserves at least one more year.
All right.
No matter what happens this season, I think he's done well enough. I don't think you fire him after one season with Joe
Burrow. What if on every time the Bengals are down 10 points, they score a touchdown every time he goes for 2 and fails?
I mean, then you're talking about hypothetical situations that I don't want to get into. Otherwise, the podcast will last 3 more hours.
All right.
Why has he done well enough to get a third year? He's 4.
Breach hates change. That's all he said.
What were the Bengals' expectations this year? What you didn't think they were going to be good. Like, what were their expectations?
I mean, they have 2 wins.
Let me put it to you this way. Would you rather have?
They have a tie.
Let me put it to you this way. Would you rather have Zach Taylor, Brian Flores, Joe Judge, or Matt Rhule?
We're talking about Anthony Lynn maybe not getting fired when he has way more talent.
We're talking about it, like Adam Gase. He's not fired yet either. Like,
well, because that's not a similar situation. Anthony Lynn has a bunch of 1-score losses, as does Zach Taylor.
Okay. All right. You're fine with him.
He's got 4 1-score losses. 2 of those games go the other way. All of a sudden, you're 4-1.
Why do people in Cincinnati have this weird loyalty to like
failure? Failure, Brenton. It's not even mediocrity. It's failure.
You're like, we gotta give Andy Dalton one.
When that's all you know growing up, you just come to accept it. It's part of you. The darkness. It's a pit.
Bengals were good when you were growing up.
They didn't win a Super Bowl, Ryan. They didn't.
The Reds won a bunch of World Series.
They won one in my lifetime.
By the way, fun fact, if you're a Steelers fan, not if you're a Pirates fan, if the Steelers went out all the way to the Super Bowl, they will have more wins in the 2020 season than the Pirates did.
That is a fun fact.
That's a fun fact. That's crazy.
Yeah, Pirates apparently aren't very good at baseball.
Pirates are terrible. That's exactly what I was thinking of when I was thinking about, like, people were like, oh, like, we'll still root for the Pirates. It's like, just stop. All right, we got a couple more games. Let's get through these. Browns 10, Texans 7. I mean, the only thing to talk about this game is, like, did Nick Chubb do the right thing or did he screw fantasy managers and gamblers when he sprinted? He had a jailbreak late. The wind was awful in this game. The Texans couldn't do anything. What's that?
30-minute delay because of the weather.
30-minute delay because of the weather. The Browns got an early field goal, and then Chubb got a touchdown in the second half. They're up 10-0. The Texans march and, like, somehow put together a touchdown drive. It's 10-7. The Browns are just, I mean, just gashing them in the run game because I had the Kareem Hunt over prop. I'm just trashing the Texans in the run
231 rushing yards.
Yes. And they had like 120 coming into the fourth quarter, maybe. Like the fourth quarter, they just got loose on him. So Chubb breaks one loose, a long jailbreak. And then right as he gets the 1 yard line, he steps out of bounds instead of going in for the score, which allowed Baker Mayfield to take a knee. The Browns win the game that way. Did he do the right thing?
You know what? During the post game conversation, both Pete Prisco and Jamie Eisenberg thought he did. No, they'd have been up by, what would they have been up by? They'd have been up 17-7. Have you seen the Texans play? 80-mile-an-hour winds. The weather was terrible. There's no way they're coming back. I don't care that you ran out of bounds. It's fine. But I mean, if you score a touchdown there, it's not the same situation as Todd Gurley a few weeks ago.
Well, I'll say that by not scoring the touchdown, you eliminate potential injuries. Cause you just go there and take a knee and you're done with the game instead of having to like do the extra point. Everybody does the kickoff.
Oh, no, I'm not worried about that. I thought you meant if they, by going out of bounds, there's a chance you get injured on the subsequent plays. No, you're not getting injured on an extra point, or just take a knee on the extra point. Then you're so worried about it.
No, but I'm saying that like you don't like then you have to kick off and then the Texans run a bunch of plays and your defense is back out there in the field instead of it's over. So I think you did the right thing.
That's annoying. I didn't care either way.
And you know, if you score a touchdown, your win probability is like 99.8%. If you kneel it, it's 100%.
If you run out of bounds, the win probability is 100%.
You cannot lose by stopping at the 1 yard line.
You could fumble the snap.
You could fumble the snap, but yeah.
Well, it's not 100%.
Well, it's as close to 100% as you can get without actually being 100%.
Let me ask you this. Unless you have some more questions about the Browns, I want to ask quickly about.
I was going to press the dunk on button. No, go ahead.
You can do that.
It's fine.
I don't know if JLC reported this, but there was a report out there before the games on Sunday that the Texans think about bringing Romeo Crennel back. What's going on?
Jack Easterby is a disaster.
Is this this job is worse than the Jets job, by the way.
Yeah. I don't think whoever takes this job is not lasting long.
Like this is the worst job in the NFL.
Maybe. You have Deshaun Watson, which is huge.
And what else? Do you have draft picks? Do you have salary cap space?
Will Fuller.
Yeah, that's true. You got two players.
He's a free agent though. Yeah. I mean, like they reportedly want to sign him to an extension. You have no draft picks. You have no salary cap space. You have an unhappy franchise icon in JJ Watt. You have Deshaun Watson who signed a contract, which is great, but he's also regressed this year, holds the ball way too long. You have Laremy Tunsil on the highest offensive lineman, left tackle contract in football. It's not good, man.
And Romeo Crennel is 73. Like, what kind of contract are you even giving him? It's not like you can give him a 3-year deal.
You can't put somebody that old in charge of something that important.
And then you get him a 1-year, you know, you put him a 1-year deal. He's a lame duck coach every year, and you don't need that either.
It's always, the only reason you hire Romeo Crennel is because you don't think you can hire anybody else.
You don't know what you're doing. That's the right answer.
Or you think that the owner is going to hire, you know, some big time coach who wants to get rid of, bring in his own front office. Yeah, so you're going to lose your job.
Remember, Jack Easterby worked with Romeo Crennel in Kansas City when he was the head coach there after he was promoted from the interim.
And the Texans just fired their PR person in the middle of the season.
Amy Pavlovich, yeah. She apparently, they said she wasn't a culture fit.
Which is what?
Well, she made some tweets. She was tweeting about the election, basically.
Is she the only one in the NFL that tweeted about the election?
She was not.
The only one who worked for the Texans.
Oh, okay.
All right. Raiders and Broncos. Wow, final game. Raiders and Broncos.
God, the Broncos suck.
Raiders -3 covers the under 50.5 hits. Josh Jacobs dominates. Devontae Booker almost also dominated. John Gruden gave him a revenge game against his old team. Drew Lock had 7 touchdowns in the fourth quarter coming into this game. He had 1 in this matchup, but the Broncos aren't great, and the Raiders are pretty good.
Drew Lock is – I'm one of the idiots to pick the Broncos to go to the playoffs because I thought Drew Lock would take the necessary steps and with all the weapons around him. Yeah. Cortland Sutton's hurt. Von Miller's hurt. I get all that. I don't care. You need to be playing better. You can't throw four interceptions, some of them of the truly terrible variety. On the other side, every week, Derek Carr is captain check down, and he's doing it better than anyone on planet Earth. Credit to him. Credit to John Gruden. The defense still isn't great, but it's fine. They can find their form. I mean, they feel like a playoff team. I don't know how far they're going to go, but that doesn't matter. The fact that they continue to get better is good enough for me.
Ryan, the defense would be great if they get to play the Broncos every week.
Yeah, that's true.
Get to force five turnovers. That was insane. But this is like John Gruden football. I'm sure he'd love to see Derek Carr take the occasional deep shot. But
Derek Carr's throwing a lot more often now.
Oh, yeah, no, he's done it a lot this season. It's almost like Gruden just pulled him aside like, look, bro, I don't know how much longer you can be my quarterback if you don't start taking deep shots, because Derek Carr has definitely been much, much better. I mean, Brinson hasn't been complaining about him all season. That alone tells you that he's been much better this season. But that's it. You know, the Raiders, Derek Carr, all he had to do was hand the ball off. He did a good job of that. Josh Jacobs and Devontae Booker did the rest.
Yeah, Raiders are a spicy team. They can put up points. They gave the Chiefs their only loss.
Yep.
All right, let's get to winners and losers. Let's talk about some winners. And Breach, we will start with you. Give me your winner for the week.
You know, I could go obvious here, but I'll let one of you guys have the biggest play or that team. I'm going to go the Hail Mary. I'm not going with the Hail Mary. I thought about it. I'm going with the New York Giants. One, because Debo is an Eagles fan, but mostly because, look, if any other team, if you're 3-7, your season's over, you're trash, your season's basically viewed as a failure if that's your record through 10 weeks. The New York Giants? No. They are all of a sudden a half game out of the playoff race, the best team in the division, going to the playoffs.
That's disrespectful to Debo. My winner, Brian Flores, or B-Flow as I call him. I don't call him that. And the Miami Dolphins. We talked about their turnaround earlier in this podcast. Tua's getting better. Breach points out he's not hit his stride yet. When he does, watch out. I don't think this team is winning the division, but I feel like they're going to the playoffs, and that's a huge turnaround from just 12 months ago when they were literally 0-7.
Enormous turnaround. I will say that my winner is Kyler Murray. I will take the obvious bait because you guys went in different directions. Murray, like, I really think, you know, there would be questions about how they lost the game and how they played against Buffalo and a bad defense. And he had a good game, but didn't have an epic game. And all of a sudden, you throw that bomb, you complete that Hail Mary, and you're tied for first place in the division. You are rocketing into the MVP conversation. You have some real legitimate wins on your resume between being the Seahawks and being the Bills. And you feel like if you're Arizona that you might have enough pieces in place where you're going forward thinking we are a playoff team. We can make a playoff push. And who knows what can happen once we get in. Now, I don't think a lot will happen, but they have good pieces on both sides of the ball. So I will say Kyler Murray and the Cardinals are a winner here. How about a loser, Breach?
My loser is Nick Chubb fantasy owners, because I am one of them. I cried actual tears when he went out of bounds at the 1 yard line. It took me 10 minutes of silence before I was able to get over it. So to all you other Nick Chubb fantasy owners, I completely empathize with you.
My loser is the Baltimore Ravens. They had a chance to beat what is not a great Patriots team. Instead, they lost that game on some pretty crappy offensive play. The defense couldn't stop the running game, and now they're tied with the Browns in the division. They're both three games back of the Steelers, and Brinson, you mentioned it looks like the Steelers may have wrapped up the division already.
It sure does. I will say that my losers are the Houston Texans for all the reasons we mentioned before. The fact that, like, this team, I mean, they scored, the weather was bad, but they can't stop anybody on defense. Deshaun Watson is again regressing. Jack Easterby is going to hire Romeo Crennel on a full-time basis. I mean, everything about the Texans screams five-year debacle, where you just drafted a franchise quarterback, a guy who one of the most exciting young players in the league, and you're going to absolutely squander his prime years while he's under contract because of a power struggle that resulted in a chaplain from New England getting a hold of this team's front office. And I think that the Texans are heading into a darker place than they are now, and things are already pretty dark, especially when you consider they're giving up their first round pick and their second round pick to the Dolphins next year, Ryan's big winners. And that's only going to make Miami stronger and only make Houston worse. All right, that's the show. That's it. Tomorrow, we'll have a Monday night preview with Mike McClure of Sportsline. We smashed our props last time. We're going to smash them again on Monday. So make sure and check that out. For Ryan and John, I'm Will. Thanks for listening and watching. See you guys later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.